Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Everything about this moment in history seems uniquely designed to challenge our mental health. We are suffering, we need answers, and we need help. That's why I'm so thrilled to be partnering with Sound Mind Live and Consequence of Sound to host their new podcast series, Going There. I'm Dr. Mike Friedman, clinical psychologist and life coach. With Going There, I will talk with musicians who struggle with their mental health, just like us. After all, mental illness affects us all. And the same artists who have stepped up to share their wonderful work with us are now sharing the intimate details of their journey in living with mental illness. We are going to ask the tough questions, and we're going to have the difficult conversations, all so that we can learn from each other. But more importantly, to shine a light on the difficult topic of mental illness so that we can all come out of the darkness and get the care we need. So we hope you join us on this journey. Going There. The crossroads where music and mental health meet.
So you want to be a rock and roll star? No? Well, how about a podcast star? Well, as it turns out, there's a new all-in-one platform just for you. It's called Anchor, and it's the easiest way to make a podcast. And check this out, it's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer, and then Anchor will distribute the podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify and Apple Podcast and, you know, everywhere else in podcast land. And what's even better, you can actually make money from your podcast. Go figure. No minimum listenership on that. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So go ahead, download the free Anchor app right now or go to anchor.fm to get started. So what are you waiting for? Podcast stardom is within your reach.
Do you read Stephen King? Good news. There's a club for you. The Losers Club. Every Friday, us losers journey through the never-ending wastelands of King's Dominion. We sink our teeth into each of King's novels, dive deep into the lore, and review every adaptation. Even better, we're always having guests over. Thomas Jane, Will Wheaton, Mary Lambert, Mick Garris, the list goes on. So what are you waiting for? Join us as we read on through long days and pleasant nights.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith with the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org. Consequence of Sound and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thank you so much for checking us out once again, or maybe it's your first time. And if that's the case, hit that subscribe button. Keep up with what we do. It's three brand new interviews every single week. Great way to keep up with all of your favorite artists, discover some new ones, and know what's happening in the music world. You can find us at all the usual spots like iTunes and Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Acast, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you like to get your podcast from. Just type in Kyle Meredith with. We'll bring you a brand new interview every single Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. I'm Kyle Meredith. Today, I'm going to be talking with Rick Lee, the co-founder of 10 Years After, who just released his brand new autobiography called From Headstocks to Woodstock. We're going to recount his early life up until the moment the band played the legendary festival. And he talks about the enduring legacy of 10 Years After, their classic song, I'd Love to Change the World, and why we continue to revisit that late 60s era. What is it about it that attracts us even over 50 years later? Although it's with that in mind, he tells us about a very different atmosphere that the band found at the Isle of Wight Festival that was also played in 1969. So it's not always flowers and peace, as we'll hear. The legendary drummer is also going to revisit the time he taught Led Zeppelin's John Bonham specific drum patterns while they were touring with Zeppelin, and how 10 years after learned how to jam after touring with the Grateful Dead. That's all in here and more. Let's jump into it. It's Kyle Meredith with Rick Lee of 10 Years After.
How you doing, Kyle?
I'm doing great, man. It's a pleasure to talk to you. Congratulations on this book, From Headstocks to Woodstock. It's a great read.
Good. I'm glad you like it. Thank you.
I thought I kind of want to do this in reverse today and start with the ending because, you know, I'll go ahead and paint the picture. You know, here we are talking. It's the inauguration here in the United States. And the way the book ends, you paint this, it's beautifully written, the poetry that you're writing there about, you know, it seems like we've got a long way to go from the promises of the Woodstock generation, you know, of your generation. It was powerful. To have a song like I'd Love to Change the World that just keeps speaking to a current era, that has to be, I don't know, a great accomplishment, but at the same time frustrating. Would I be correct in that assessment?
I love the heritage, and I think it is probably not necessarily the best, but certainly one of the best songs that Alvin wrote. Chick and I are very proud to be carrying on that tradition and that heritage that he left us. And you're right, it's incredible how it's never really faded away. It says today the same as it did in the 70s when it first came out. You know, it relates to what's going on right now in terms of how we try to live together, but not knowing how to do it, you know. So it's a proud thing. It really is.
To have had so many parallels drawn, especially in the last few years, between present day and that late 60s era, you know, that you wrap up with here. And of course, it does come back to Woodstock a lot of the time. Why does that endure so much? Why do we still look back on that for all that it was? Why are we still revisiting that?
Well, because my feeling is, obviously, I was there, so it's a great memory. But I think what happened there was that, like, it did what it said on the tin. It was a festival of love, peace, and music. And that's exactly what happened there. I think, if I remember right, there was only one fight there, and I don't think that was very serious. 300,000 or 500,000 or however many, a lot of people learned to live together, which mainly was for about a week, I suppose. A lot of those people had been there by the time they'd actually traveled there and then traveled to get out again. You know, and I say cooped up, but I mean they were jammed in on that field essentially, you know, having to have helicopters dropping food parcels to them at some point. And during that storm, when, you know, it rained and the wind was almost a tornado, it was like a mini tornado. I've often said health and safety wouldn't have passed health and safety these days. And those towers with the PA on, I mean, however they stayed up in that storm, I have no idea, because I was in that storm. I know how strong that wind was. But the humanity, I think, of the people comes through, and their warmth, certainly when we finished our set, you know, the reception was tremendous. But the main thing that came across was, actually, when we started Good Morning Little School Girl, we had to start it four times because the guitars wouldn't stay in tune. And the patience they had, you know, there was no booing, there was no get on with it, you know, there was nothing but understanding and patience. It was incredible. And so it proved that people could live together for a reasonable length of time in a fairly appalling conditions without killing each other, you know.
Right.
Which is not what we have now, certainly in London, and I know in parts of your country. It's difficult to move without being afraid to move. You know, I just hope that feeling can come back. Somebody asked me about the Isle of Wight earlier, and if you compare the two festivals, the Isle of Wight, as they rightly said, I think was slightly bigger in terms of numbers. But the kids there broke the fences down to get a free festival, and that didn't happen. The promoters weren't going to have that, and they set dogs on the people, and they were hitting them with nightsticks or the equivalent, you know. Mm. So that was a nasty festival, in my opinion, by comparison. I mean, when we played, and when I was backstage with my old mate Keith Moon and a few other people, it was a great sort of party atmosphere, but the, if you like, the overall feeling of that, it was not what Woodstock leaves me with. The memory of Woodstock and the memory of the Isle of Wight are total opposites, really.
And to have done so much around in that short time, especially in that year, I mean, you also talk about, you know, Newport Jazz is in there. And it covers, I mean, a lot of ground in a little bit of time, you know, even going back further than that. You know, what I find interesting is, you know, coming from the, you know, your first bands and the Jaybirds and everything, I mean, you really did get to see rock have its great awakening, you know, coming from what it was in the 50s to something so much more expansive in such a little time, 10 years later, no pun intended, actually, with that. Did it feel like it was as much of a transformation in real time as it looks like now?
I think it was, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I was brought up, you know, playing that old rock and roll stuff that you said. I mean, to a degree. I mean, we did that with Alvin and I'm Going Home, you know, because that was really where Alvin's heart was in, you know, Little Richard and Jerry Lee Lewis and Chuck Berry, you know. they were a lot of his main influences. Elvis Presley, of course, was Scotty Moore. And so all that came through in what we did. But when you look at what we started with and then the influences that we had later, and then I remember one day we played in London and there were two guys afterwards when I was packing up my gear. One of them came up to me, broad Birmingham accent, and he said, them things you're playing with your left hand there, I said, oh, the triplets. Yeah, is that triplets? He said, how are you doing that? So I showed him, and later he transposed it and put it on the bass drum, and that was John Bonham.
Oh, wow.
well, we did quite a lot of gigs together, actually, with that over the years. So we all were learning from each other, and we'd all basically had one foot in the jazz that went before it, you know. And I think to a degree, that's how we learned to improvise as well. We also learned a lot when we first came to America. The two first bands we played with, the first one was Grateful Dead. And we thought we knew how to jam, but they went on after us and played for like 2 hours of jamming. So we realized we knew nothing. And then the second lot were Canned Heat, who we became very close friends with. I'm still very good friends with Fito. And they jammed a lot as well. You know, they used to do their boogie at the end of the set. And so we actually pinched a few ideas from that. And then when we went back to England, we did that. That then changed the way the crowds looked at us in England. Jeff's an Airplane, you know, we played with them. We did a lot of outdoor festivals with them in the early days. And I saw one of their fans. I said, you've been to their gigs for the last 4 or 5 days, every one of them. I said, why do you go to see so many dates? He said, because it's never the same. You know, they jam it differently every day. And I thought, and so, you know, we then started to do that so that we played the same songs. We never played them, you know, the same way. And we still don't today. You know, we do Love Like a Man is one of the oldest we still do. And I could not tell you what the solo is going to be like at all until we played it. You know, I wait until Marcus and Colin start setting up a groove. When I know what that groove is, I mean, I'm still playing, but I'm kind of vamping. And when I know what the groove is going to be, then I can sit in on it, and then I can start to then change that as well, rhythmically. So it's never the same twice.
Well, it's been great what you've done through the years. I'm looking forward to hearing the new album that you guys are talking about. And this book, again, it's a great accomplishment from Headstocks to Woodstock. Rick Lee, thank you so much for taking the time to talk about it today. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely my pleasure, Carl. Thank you for your time.
Take care. Bye.
Thanks. And you. Bye.
My thanks to Rick Lee. Of 10 years after, again, the new autobiography is called From Headstocks to Woodstock. Thanks to you for checking out this series. Please do hit that subscribe button before you get out of here. Again, we put out 3 brand new interviews every single week, so it's a lot to keep up with. I promise you'll enjoy it. iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Acast, YouTube for the video versions, or wherever you like to get your podcasts from. And then head over to WFPK.org, where I do a show Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern, an hour full of song premieres and music news, anniversary spins, bonus interviews. Again, that's Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence of Sound has your music and film news. You can also find me on the social media spots, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all 3 of them, at Kyle Meredith. Please do like and follow along there as well. That does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.